Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and all this month, we're encouraging you to enter your favorite local library for a chance to win the NYC Neighborhood Library Award. The awards, really plural, honor extraordinary libraries by providing 5 grand prize winners with $20,000 each and 5 additional finalist branches with $10,000 each, sponsored by the Stavros Niarchos Foundation and Charles H. Revson Foundation. The 2017 nomination period closes March 13th. You can nominate your library by going to nyclibraryawards.org, and there's a link on our website if you want to get there through us. And in conjunction with the awards, we have embarked on a series all about historical fiction. That's one kind of book you'll find in the library, and that's the one we're having some fun with between now and mid-March on the show. And we're inviting writers who've written historical fiction to come on and talk about the craft. And we've also got a historical fiction writing contest that you all can enter. It's a challenge where you write your own short story inspired by a few audio prompts that we've pulled from the WNYC archive, actual audio history from our archives in, you know, short enough sound bites for you to listen to quickly. There are 4 to choose from, and we'll get to that a little later. But if you want to hear these prompts, you can go to WNYC.org and listen and see if you want to try your hand at writing a little short story, up to 2,000 words only, and enter it in our historical fiction writing contest. So last week we had Christopher Paul Curtis and Lois Lowry on the show to talk about young adult historical fiction, about introducing young people to large themes and historical concepts like the Holocaust and the Civil Rights Movement through their novels. It's a lot of work to write a convincing piece of historical fiction, one that both entertains and educates. It requires detail to convince your readers that you're writing from that time. So today we wanted to talk about research, what it takes to write about a different time period, and where to start. So today we have 2 authors who've written many novels, and among their published works, both have written historical novels which happen to be set in New York in the 1840s. So with us are WNYC's Studio 360 host, Kurt Anderson, who is also an award-winning novelist, and his book is Heyday. Hi, Kurt.
Hello, Brian.
And with Kurt, we have the award-winning novelist Lindsay Fay, and the book we'll be talking about of hers is Gods of Gotham. Thank you so much for coming in, Lindsay.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
So Kurt, Heyday follows Benjamin Knowles, a British aristocrat who impulsively abandons the old world to reinvent himself in New York. The year is 1848, a year that students of history will know and that you've characterized as having the political tumult of the 1960s combined with the tech boom of the 90s times 10.
That's right. One of the germs of the idea was my prompts were reading both about the gold rush in California, which began right then, at the same time coming across something I knew much less about, which were the extraordinary revolutions happening in Europe. And as I began to sort of just reading the history, finding that nobody ever connected those two 1848s, that 1848 in America means something very different than 1848 in Europe. And so I began thinking about what kind of characters and story might connect those two extraordinary things.
So much of Heyday's dialogue consists of people marveling to each other about telegraphy, railway travel, and the rise in enlightened spiritualism. A main character, Timothy Skaggs, is Daguerrean, what you call in the book the epitome of the new, with some of those technologies coming into use.
Right, exactly. No, and I still, you know, I still find myself immersed in that time. I gave one of the very few cameos of actual people from the time to Walt Whitman in Heyday, and then of course this last week, as I've read about this newly discovered Whitman novel from essentially my period, I felt like I was suddenly having a fiction flashback.
And Lindsay, your novel Gods of Gotham is set in Manhattan in 1845, I see, from the point of view of an Irish immigrant and a police officer named Timothy Wilde. Why did you choose 1845 for a New York novel?
Well, I think that I've always been interested only in writing books that I would like to read but don't exist for some reason. So I apparently have to write it myself. And I was just having so much I feel so akin with Kurt, having talked about the confluence of events happening in a particular year, and a bunch of them were significant. In 1845, the NYPD was founded. We had 400,000 citizens here in New York City before we had a police force. So previous to that, we had sheriffs and a notoriously terrible night watch system. And at the same time, in the same summer, the Irish potato famine landed very, very hard. And so there was a massive immigration influx into New York City at the identical time that the NYPD was founded. And at the same time that in that summer, there was a massive fire that destroyed 300 buildings in downtown New York. It resulted in 30 casualties. It was seen as far off as New Jersey. Essentially, what happened was that a fire was started in a place that was next to a gunpowder storage warehouse. So all of these things happening at the same time, I thought was just really begging to be fictionalized. And so I went ahead and did it. And so I quite empathize with Kurt in his position.
And your protagonist beat is Manhattan's notorious Sixth Ward, which you write is New York's Hell's Privy Pit. Where is the Sixth Ward, and what was it like at that time?
5 points, essentially. So right now it would be just sort of the border of the edge of Chinatown. So right around Elizabeth Street, Orange Street, and there was it was built on a swamp. Essentially, there was a pond. It used to be an idyllic pond. It was beautiful. And then they decided that they were going to essentially pave over it. And it was akin to St. Giles and other locations in London for being one of the worst places to live in the civilized, so-called civilized world at the time. So, yeah, that's his beat that he's patrolling.
Did you both want to tell the history of that era because you were fascinated with the history of that era, different things about the history of the 1840s, and you were looking for a vehicle with which to do that? Or were you just looking for a good story and you kind of stumbled upon the 1840s? Kurt, how about you?
Both. I mean, it's hard to say which is that chicken and which is that egg in my case. You know, I had never written historical fiction before, so the idea of doing that was interesting. And then once I became interested in, you know, the California Gold Rush and Europe in the same moment, and began thinking, oh, what kind of story could happen there? And by the way, I was in some significant way listening to Lindsay talk. I thought, well, man, we have to form a club just to talk about 1840s New York.
But right.
I was, of course, at that time working at WNYC's old offices, which were on right there on the edge of Five Points and downtown, and also walking every day from the WNYC offices, passing by this building that had been built at that time as this remarkable first new great department store, which then became one of the scenes that I depict in the fiction. So it was, I was thinking about it, but then there I was, walking, you know, these paths and with some of the stuff that was there then, not only this department store, but then looking to my left or right, depending if I was going to or from WNYC, Old City Hall, built at the very beginning of the century. And you know, so I found myself as a, you know, citizen of New York walking the streets, feeling as though squinting and time traveling, which is, of course, one of the reasons I like New York in the first place is that make-believe time travel that is possible here.
For people who think the idea for novels come from some kind of profound revelation, no, they come from your commute. Lindsay, you want to join the 1840s club here?
Oh, absolutely, yes. We need a secret handshake, though, right, Kurt?
Yeah.
Not super secret, you know. just complicated enough. I think that I actually set out to write it because I was frustrated about something else entirely. I was frustrated when I wrote The Gods of Gotham about modern day rhetoric regarding immigration. I was frustrated about rhetoric regarding Mexican people. I was frustrated about modern day rhetoric regarding Muslim people. I wrote that novel during the time period, I think everyone can probably recall this, when they were trying to put a Muslim community center sort of in relatively close proximity to Ground Zero. And everybody who wasn't in New York freaked out about it. And everybody who was in New York said, that's not a problem. It's a community center. We don't mind. At least a large percentage of us had no problem with it whatsoever. So I think that when I set out to write The Gods of Gotham, I was looking at, I am a good chunk Irish by lineage. And when you look at the way Catholics were viewed when they were first coming to New York City, having an affinity with Catholicism was considered akin to, you know, being in league with the Antichrist. And that is really the level of dialogue that was going on regarding Catholics flooding into New York City. They were just going to vote however the Pope told them to. They were terrible people, according to a lot of the media that was going on at the time. And if I'm frustrated about something that's going on today, I could stand on a soapbox with a megaphone and nobody would listen to me. But if I write historical fiction and I point out things that have sort of happened in the past that have thematic resonance with what's going on now, then I feel like I can actually accomplish a dialogue with people in a much more effective fashion. So that was what I was doing when I set out to write it.
We'll continue.
It's so
with
true. I remember, I mean, as I was writing, and this is 10 years ago, I didn't start out with this immigration idea, but as Lindsay says, coming across this extraordinary and vicious resistance to Catholics and mm-hmm. Irish at this time was you know, as the new anti-Latin immigration movement was really happening, mm-hmm. I certainly saw that resonance and felt it. And again, thinking about this time, and I in Heyday write about the slave catchers that existed and came to New York to find runaway slaves and send them back to slavery in the South. Just hearing Lindsay talk about the historical resonances, thinking about new planned deportations of millions of people living in America. Again, as Mark Twain may or may not have said, history does not repeat, but it rhymes.
Kurt Anderson, author of Heyday, and Lindsay Fay, author of Gods of Gotham, will continue with us in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we continue our historical fiction series in conjunction with the New York City Neighborhood Library Awards. With us right now are Kurt Anderson, who you know as the host of Studio 360, also the author of the novel Heyday, set in New York in the 1840s, along with the novelist Lindsay Fay, whose book Gods of Gotham is also set in New York in the 1840s. I'll also mention that her most recent novel, Jane Steele, is up for an Edgar Award, and she's got a new collection of Sherlock Holmes short stories coming out next week called The Whole Art of Detection. Now, in our historical fiction contest that you're all invited to enter, and if you've never written anything in the fiction vein, you can even take a shot at it because it's going to be really fun and somebody's going to win. So we are challenging all of you who would like to try to write your own piece of short historical fiction based on any of four audio prompts that we have pulled from the WNYC archive. There are four to choose from, ranging in voices and topics. One of them comes from Judge Owen McGivern, Chief Justice of the New York Supreme Court in 1961, speaking about the great struggle to cleanse and uplift the West Side area, particularly Times Square, from crime. Here's a bit of the clip.
For as you know, on 42nd Street, for many long years now, the garish and the tawdry have been somewhat supreme. In fact, we are told that some nights the man in the moon blushes for shame when he sails over Times Square west of 42nd Street.
So that's what a prominent New York judge sounded like in 1961. There's more to that clip if you want to go to our site and hear the whole thing. And if it got your imagination going at all as a prompt to write your own piece of historical fiction set around that, choose that one or listen to the other three prompts we have at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show and you'll see the four audio clips for the historical fiction challenge. WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. I'm curious to get back with both of you to something that you said before the break. Lindsay, especially you, because it sounded like your dive into historical fiction around the way Irish people were seen and treated in the 1840s in New York was inspired by a particular current event, the way Muslims were treated in New York and, you know, the lower Manhattan Islamic Community Center that got proposed. You can't make the case directly in a historical novel about something that's going on today. So
right.
You only could do it by just sort of reminding whoever happens to read the book that that the Irish were once seen, that Catholics were once seen as beneath contempt too, and you can't get it at it any more directly than that because you're setting a novel in the past?
Yeah, I think it's just a question of all of my novels are very character based, and I think that to the extent that people are able to identify with those characters and to sympathize with them and empathize with them is the most important thing that I can do as a novelist. But if situationally those people are facing things that we continue to face today and they're having to make difficult choices regarding, you know, like social services, social justice, you know, having some degree of care for people who are strangers, who are arriving on our shores, having some level of I want to share this country with you as opposed to I want to, you know, the country's not a pie. If there are too many people, you know, there to be seated at dinner, you make a longer table. I think that is, in my personal opinion, mm-hmm. a better way of going about things than some of the rhetoric that is being thrown around today. So, I try to place things. I try to make it as relevant to today as possible. But in addition, I think that historical fiction it has this remarkable agency where people, you know, they can read it and they can look at it and they can say, oh, I see that we have done this before, and the Irish people didn't actually turn out to have
destroy
been,
the country
to destroy the country. Yes, in fact, they are, you know, pretty much the entire NYPD. things don't always work out
among many other things. Kurt, for you as somebody who does a lot of current affairs commentary too, do you have like compartmentalization in your brain of, you know, the political stuff, the current stuff, and then the work of historical fiction unrelated to that? And, oh, now I just get to kind of escape to the 1840s for a while? Or is it not like that?
Now, I would say, I mean, compartmentalized, sure, but very leaky compartments, you know? I've just finished a work, you know, not historical fiction, but a history, this strange history of America that I'm Random House is publishing in July called Fantasyland. That is, so I've gone from fiction to historical fiction, back to contemporary fiction, and now to history. And then, you know, my most recent novel was half set, half in the near future and half in the late 1960s. So what is that? And having, you know, been a child and teenager in the late 60s, I wasn't even sure if that was I didn't even think of it as historical fiction exactly, but then, of course, talking to my children about it as I was reading it, it was totally historical fiction. So it all, I would say, cross-fertilizes. And then I was thinking, as Lindsay was talking about, and your question, Brian, about, oh, does one turn historical fiction into some massive subtweet about mm-hmm. the present? You know, I was thinking about Twain's the great American novel, one of the great American novels, Huckleberry Finn, mm-hmm. which was historical fiction when it was published. You know, I mean, it was 20 years after the Civil War, 40 years after it was set, he wrote it and published it. But of course, he to some degree, it wasn't just a look back to the time of slavery. He meant it as a commentary and a guide to life in the Reconstruction, post-Reconstruction age as well.
Well, it's also the result. I mean, that novel is the most beautiful pair of sentences ever to be written, I think, by an American author, when Huck Finn says, "All right, then, I'll go to hell." Because he would rather go to hell than betray his friend, even though his friend is black. And it's just, that's beautiful.
From Kurt Anderson's Heyday, "And now there was another happy mob, even larger than last Saturday's Mexican War Gala, a slow-moving 8-foot-wide herd of New Yorkers, a festival of the people celebrating the European insurgency." And from Lindsay Fay's Gods of Gotham, "The air was yeasty and wet as a bread oven by 11 in the morning, and you could taste the smell of it at the back of your throat. I was fighting not to notice the mix of fever, sweat, and the deceased cart horse half pushed into the alley around the corner." So a little bit of 1840s New York, as told by Lindsay Fay in Gods of Gotham and Kurt Anderson in Heyday. And listeners, go to our website and listen to those four historical audio prompts from the WNYC archives and join our historical fiction writing contest. And Lindsay, Kurt, what a pleasure. Thank you both very much for coming on.
Thank you so much.